Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is David Lewis. He is a mystic, spiritual teacher, composer and author for the Aquarian Age. Now obviously you want him to tell us about his early years and what led him into that type of life, but I will say that David was raised Catholic and embraced the concepts of karma and reincarnation when he was just 14, after reading Edgar Cayce's The Sleeping Prophet. Now, the only reason I told you, rather than ask David to introduce that fact, is that I wanted to tell him that I, too, found my spiritual path through reading Edgar Cayce's work, and for me, the trigger were the readings about Atlantis. Are you there, David?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's very nice to have you on the program. I'm sure we've got very much to talk about. Tell us about those early years and what happened after you had this insight through Edgar Cayce's book, The Sleeping Prophet.
Well, I was reading a lot of mystical teachings because, frankly, Orthodox Christianity or Catholicism didn't really answer my lifelong questions about where am I coming from, you know, where did I come from, where am I going,
yes,
my source, and it's karma and reincarnation was the key. So I continued studying all kinds of different mystical teachings, Gurdjieff, Ostensky, Emanuel Swedenborg, and all kinds of things that actually my grandfather had quite a comprehensive library of New Thought and what would someone consider New Age teachings, and
yeah,
he was ahead of his time, I think. And so I inherited, when he passed on, my dad inherited his library. I started reading all these books, and they answered a lot of questions, but there was always more. And then I found the teachings of the Ascended Masters, and that really keyed me into my divine plan. And I never really expected that something would happen to me of a deep, deep mystical nature, what happened in 2004, but I had an experience that, after having been in a community, an intentional spiritual community for over 20 years, I had this experience where I was taken up in consciousness, and two particular ascended masters were really instrumental in seeing to it that I could communicate directly with them at a telepathic level. And from that day on, I started receiving direct transmissions, and I won't say channeling because to me that brings up a little bit of a challenge for me, because I don't consider myself a channel. I feel that I receive, by a certain empowerment of the Holy Spirit, a direct heart-to-heart communique, and it's always very beautiful. There's always a lot of wonderful spiritual light that's conveyed, and inspiration, and not just a message, but a deep and abiding presence of incredible love and compassion. And so I've been able to bring forth these messages. One key one from the Blessed Mary, Mother of Jesus, who gave us back on March 23rd of this year, what she says are the five things we must do before 2012.
Yes. Would you like to tell us what they are now?
Okay, sure. Well, it's very important that the first thing she said was to reconnect with our source. And whatever we call the divine, God, the universal, the mind, the Christ consciousness, whatever we seem to call it based on our personal paradigm, we have to really reconnect with that and merge with that stream of God, beingness, and the essence of our higher self, which is the real us. And when we're plugged into that divine reality, then whatever comes upon the earth, we are safe in that, a certain, like a haven of light of God's aura that surrounds us. And so that's our defense. We don't have to worry so much about what's coming. We simply live in the now, in presence, and no matter what transpires, we will be prompted to be at the right place at the right time. So that's the most important thing, and that's true regardless of what happens. So the second thing is to forgive ourselves and others fully, everything. You know, a lot of people right before they pass on, they want to reconcile themselves with their loved ones that may have had challenges with. Well, we can do that right now. And so we need to first love ourselves and forgive ourselves, and then really move into this awareness of we don't have any enemies, and the people that have been our greatest challenge in life often have been our greatest teachers. So if we can forgive and forget and move on, it really releases us from certain karmic entanglements that have kept us bound to this earth. And so Mary spoke of that. And one of the keys for that is the violet laser light, is what we call it, the violet flame, the violet fire.
It's
accelerated energy, the seventh color on the spectrum, and a lot of mystics and New Age thinkers have seen the violet light, and you've heard of the indigo children who have this vibration in their auras that's incredible. So we're learning a lot about the violet light and Saint Germain. And the next thing is to befriend the ascended masters, who are our elder brothers and sisters who have transcended this plane. And so when we get to know them and their teachings, their awareness, and we actually, you know, not in a very crazy way, but in a very personal and deep reverential way, communicate with them in our hearts, they can transfer and communicate with us great wisdom. And so that's the third thing. The fourth thing is to build community heart by heart. And that's where we connect with others of like heart and mind. And we start to work in a greater sphere of awareness where we expand our awareness just beyond our own personal mission to include others who, because of our joint efforts, we can do more. And in the state, you know, the Buddha's talked about the Sangha, and it's very important. So these intentional communities are being formed around the earth, you know, and they're often wonderful, but they need a core of teaching and of love and of understanding to be maintained. And, you know, we saw a lot of communities and communes in the 60s and 70s, but a lot of them kind of dissipated because there needed to be a core of an understanding that sometimes wasn't there. Well, the final thing is to plan and prepare for whatever may come by having certain resources like water, food, supplies, preferably being able to be off the grid. So you may want to have a generator. If you're in the cities, have an action plan in case something does transpire where, you know, you can survive. It's not a survivalist mentality where you're freaked out about and you're fearful about the future, but you're just pragmatic and you have some extra food and resources that you can share with your neighbors. So I think a lot of people with the economic downturn have seen that, you know, there are challenges right now and it's good to be prepared.
Indeed, yes. You're really, I think, heading towards something which is on many people's minds, and that is the predictions for 2012. It certainly figures a lot in my life, and I know many other people's. Now, what is your perception of what is going to happen between now and 2012, and will that be the end of time?
Well, I don't think it's the end of the world. I think it's the end of a certain part of the Mayan calendar, and there's a lot of research being done and a lot of books being written on the subject. I think the key that we all agree on is that there's a huge shift in awareness going on. People are awakening to a higher reality, first within themselves, hopefully, and then what the world offers as opportunity for self-transcendence, for a new awareness, new thinking, and a getting out of old paradigms of, you know, the way we've dealt with the earth and polluted the earth, the way we've treated each other in a capitalistic society that doesn't necessarily always work toward the betterment of mankind. So there has to be a shift at all levels of society, and this is what the universe is really compelling us to move forward. And if we're in the right consciousness and awareness, and we're operating from our hearts and what we call the heart-mind connection, not just love as, you know, as we talk about love, but love wisdom, which is wise love, and wisdom merging into love. When we operate from that vantage point and from that paradigm, we make right decisions that endow others with the responsibility to take care of themselves and the planet, and we don't make unwise business, environmental, and national decisions that continue to move us in a dualistic society into this continual battle mode where we're always fighting against something instead of merging into more of a unified awareness of brotherhood and of not a one-world government, but a unified awareness that life is sacred and that we need to respect each other and have reverence for life at all levels.
Yeah.
So I think that the energies coming from other planetary and solar spheres that are the cosmic rays that are descending to the Earth, the solar flares and the influences of the sun, which we're only beginning to really understand, both at a scientific and a cosmic and a kind of a spiritual level, when we understand them, then we'll see why this shift is occurring. And it's a compulsion for us to grow spiritually and to change. And if we listen and we're sensitive and we move this new awareness and stream of consciousness, then we can live in presence and enjoy. And we don't have to be bound by the past paradigms of conflict that's been kind of the norm on this earth with all the wars that have transpired and the division among mankind.
Yes. My belief is that the end time is a wormhole in time, and it will transport us into a golden age, assuming that we have already reached some level of higher consciousness, which will enable that to take place. So what is your view of what will actually happen?
Well, I agree exactly with what you said. It's like it's a portal to higher consciousness infinity and a new spiral of energy. And we step through that portal, that doorway of awareness, and we emerge into this new awareness. The masters through me have said, you know, a golden crystal age can be within your own aura and awareness, and it needs to be there first for it to then be to happen in the world. So one by one by one, we need to experience that new joy, that new golden awareness. And part of it is, you know, do unto others as you would want them to do to you. If everybody lived by that, we'd have a golden age.
Yes.
But so I think that things will continue to kind of fall apart at certain levels until mankind realizes what's important. And what's important is not immediate profit, but long-term sustainability and honoring life and the environment, the earth. And all these old matrices or patterns that we set up in this society will, at some level, crumble or be transformed, hopefully gradually instead of cataclysmically, into a new golden crystal age awareness. And when greater numbers of mankind embrace this new wave of love, of Aquarian compassion, then we're going to start seeing kind of the crystallization through this point where a certain, you know, quotient of mankind gets there, and then it becomes a part of our very nature and society itself. You know, when you travel the world and you see the millions and even billions of people who are suffering, like we just, we had 70 people go to India for 2 weeks, and you see the poor people, you wonder, how in the world are we going to have a golden crystal age, you know, in this generation? Well, it can happen if we take responsibility first with our own being, and then we visualize it, we see it manifesting all around us, and then we make it happen through our active work and in the application of our spiritual path. But we can't just, it can't just be a dreamy thing that's just in our mind. It has to be put into active activity through through work and through cooperation and through using the principles and values that we're returning to of oneness in actual, you know, projects and cooperation between nations and different sectors of society. And I think that when it gets into the mass media and transforms the mass media from all of its craziness, you know, bent on Hollywood and all that transpires there, into a more of an educational level and approach, then we're going to start seeing the shift really take hold, and then it'll transform everything. But,
yes.
But I do believe that there certain things will crumble, and certain earth changes may continue to happen, and that will spark us to finally come to terms with our own awareness and then make that shift.
Yes. Do you believe this could be described as living our own truth and living the vision of what we believe the future holds for us?
Absolutely. Funny you mention that, because I just, yesterday, there was a beautiful discourse by the Blessed Mary through me of this very topic, the truth, and how there is an absolute truth, but we're never quite there. We're always on the spiral moving toward it, and we have our own individual truth that we live, and that changes based on our own evolution. But if we can hold true to these principles and our truth, our inner truth, then we can assist others in moving toward the highest truth for the entire earth. And it's not that there's only one dogma or one way. There are many pathways to the divine, and we need to embrace all others and not judge them based on their beliefs or their systems or their ideology. But we need to respect and honor them. And one of the things that Al Moria, who's an intrepid master, said to me a couple of years ago, was that if the first tenet of every faith was respect for all other faiths, then we wouldn't have a lot of the wars that we'd have. And, you know, when we went to India, the Hindus basically do this, the majority. Now, there are some problems over there, but overall, you know, people that are in the live and let live mode are the ones that we need to really take reins of the leadership of our nation so that we don't have these conflicts continuing.
Yeah. The question that is asked of me, and I'm sure you get the same thing, is from people who are not sure what they can do, if anything, to prepare themselves in readiness for this time. Well, what would your advice be to people asking that question?
Well, as Mother Mary said, the first thing to do is to connect with our source. So I recommend meditation and prayer every day, and we have a session every morning from 6 to 8:30. It's free online through our website, where we pray for the world, we pray for, you know, whatever is going on, and we send energy, we visualize, we do mantras and songs and chant and certain chanting, and we do that spiritual work. So to me, that's number one. But then beyond that, people only have certain resources. So you have water, you have food and things, but to pool your resources with others is the key, because individually it's hard for us to have everything we need. But if we, in a certain community sense, can pool our resources and our talents, then we can have enough to sustain us come, you know, whatever happens. And, you know, we're seeing the fires in Southern California going on, and we've seen the hurricanes and all that, and what this often does is hopefully bring out the best in people if they work with each other to help each other. But we need to be prepared, and when we are prepared, then we can meet the challenge with some basic knowledge. You know, we recommend having first aid training and CPR training, and even beyond that. Many of our people are trained in some advanced first aid and, you know, moving into the EMT level as first responders, but also just having the some basic necessities, you know, flashlights, candles, if the power goes out, backup systems, wherever you live. If you're in the big cities, it's a little more challenging because you're really dependent on a lot of the infrastructure of these cities. But if you live out in the country, you know, you can have a garden, you can have a greenhouse, grow some of your own food. We're working on intentional communities where people can come and work together to you know, grow organic gardens and farms. And it's really exciting to think of this and what can be when we cooperate.
Yes. It sounds as though you're very much following the same ideas of Findhorn.
Yeah, that community has been around for a very long time. They have, you know, they have an understanding of the importance of nature. And, of course, some of the mystics, you know, could see the nature spirits and devas and what we call the elementals, the gnomes and the little fairies and all that. And they come when we respect life and nature. And it's amazing how much greater growth you can have with plants when you pray for them, you love them, you send your positive energy for them. And so when you have communities like that, it's wonderful to see what can be done by our intention and our love.
Yes, indeed. Now, just getting on to a slightly different aspect here to do with 2012, you believe that it's important that we are aware of all the predictions and prophecies, from indigenous prophecies of great upheaval to NASA's prediction that the sun will reverse its magnetic poles at that time. Now, why do you think that is important? Because we can go back a few thousand years to biblical prophecies and perhaps wonder whether they have any real bearing in this period after such a long time.
Well, it's interesting. Prophecy is always there for us to hopefully change our ways so that we can avert the prophecy, the bad, the dire predictions. We cannot necessarily always avert everything if there's a propensity of mankind to continue doing what they're doing in unconsciousness. But if we awaken people to the potential for transformation by practical work, then prophecy can be averted, and also through prayer, and especially the violet light. And this is a gift from the Master Saint Germain, who many people are aware of, who came and delivered this through a teaching that he presented in the 20s and 30s through the IM movement, or the Saint Germain Foundation, which started in Chicago and has gone all over the world. But the violet light is such a key because it actually allows us to transmute our karma more quickly through the use of this light energy. And I think that it's a key for us in this age, and if we utilize it day by day, we can actually, in one lifetime, become more enlightened and potentially reach that Buddhic or Christic awareness that Gautama and Jesus had, where they can transcend this plane. So the violet light is and the energy is really key right now, because this is the seventh age coming, dawning, which is Aquarius. And it's the age of Saint Germain and of freedom and enlightenment. And so that energy is moving through the earth. And I don't know if you have, you know, you're able to see auras or others that you've probably had on your program, the mystics and the seers who have seen it. But for those who use this energy field, they become very clear in their thinking and their awareness, and they can really help to bring about this transformation that's so needed. So, yes, 2012 is kind of a signpost of major change. And I don't think it's, you know, on December 21st, the world's going to end. But a certain level of consciousness of mankind must go. And that's what this is indicative of. And I think that's what the Mayan elders were saying. That's what the Hopis and many other, you know, the Incas, the Aztecs, and others, that we are finding these incredible mystic Aborigine people that were so in tune with the universe and with Mother Earth that they were given these prophecies because this is, in a certain sense, the end time. I don't think it's a time of, as some fundamentalist Christians believe, that there's going to be this, you know, rapture where everybody's taken up. Well, I believe, in a sense, that's true, but it's different than what they think. The Christ consciousness is here now. You know, the second coming is within our hearts. Why put off to some future what you can have right now by your communion with God right within your heart now? And so we don't procrastinate by saying, well, I'm waiting till 2012 for all these changes to happen. We're making the change happen now.
Oh, I agree. That's a very good point you've made there. Can I just quickly go back to your mentioning the violet flame? Are you suggesting that people in meditation simply draw it down into their body each day?
Yeah, they can meditate and see the violet light all around them. Some people see it as a flame, as flames and fire around them. Some people see it more as like a laser accelerated energy field. Some people just see it as a sphere of light around them. You know, whatever works for you. Some people see it as like amethyst crystal energy. All of those work. But the key is to use that energy and to, through certain either chanting or a very beautifully mellow release of light through mantra, or just simply through visualization, but it can be accelerated through actually the spoken word to where it's drawn down into the physical more than just in the mental and the emotional and the etheric planes. So when you speak and you say the name of God as I am, and then you say something like, I am a being of violet fire, I am the purity or the freedom God desires, when you say that, you're invoking in the I Am name, which is kind of the name of God, or it's like the Om. When you invoke that and you start to build a momentum on doing this, it's amazing the transformation that can happen. What it does is it transforms your thinking. You start not revolving the past. You start being more positive. You start to be joyful, and your entire day goes quickly because you're in this joy aura, and so the violet light is just such an expressive and beautiful means of drawing down this new Aquarian energy, and a lot of people wear the color violet. It actually helps when you wear it on your body for you to visualize it if you like. A lot of us have amethyst geodes and crystals on our desks and our altars. If you have like a little special sacred space in your home where you kind of do your spiritual work, your meditation, or your yoga. And so whatever reminds you of that, it's nice to have those images and talismans and little thought forms and pictures and things so that you can key into that energy. And so, yes, when you do this, it actually does affect matter. And what happens is it sets up an energy field where the spinning of the electrons increases, and it throws off karma, which is like a weight on our body, which is actually almost like a very tangible weight, and it throws it into this fire, and it burns it up. So it's done at an electrostatic and a kind of a spiritual electrical at that level. It's not totally physical at, you know, that people can see so much, but it is at a very microcosmic level within the atoms themselves and within our cellular structure. And some people even feel that it transforms your DNA. And there's a lot of talk about that now with us moving into higher awareness where, you know, other DNA strands of higher awareness are actually almost like morphing into our being and transforming us at that cellular level. So it's...
Yeah.
I think this is all possible. I'm not quite a foo-foo type person where I believe that everything that's said is right on, because I'd like to have scientific proof personally. But I've experimented with this for, you know, 35 years, And I've seen the effects in my life, and a greater joy, a greater just a dedication to helping people and serving people and ministering to their needs. And I think that by even doing that through service to humanity, you transmute karma. So Edgar Cayce was a great start for me, and there was a lot of great teaching in what came through him. But I think that I, by God's grace, I've been able to receive a lot more current revelation of what we need right now. It's like, you know, Einstein said, we can't solve the world's problems at the level or in the vibration where they were created. We have to come at them from a new and higher level if we're going to transform the earth, and that's what we have to do.
Yes, yes. I again agree with you entirely. Just a final comment about the violet flame. It clearly is one that has a great transmuting effect. Do you suggest at any time that people use it for self-healing in the terms of treating sickness or sending it out to other people?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when I was very young, I was 14, this guy had this little device that actually put out like a Tesla-type electric light within this vacuum tube thing, and it was violet, and it would, you could feel this little energy, you know, you put it on, rub it on your skin, and you could feel it going and tingling. Well, there's a lot that we don't know, but that science can prove that the mystics and the ancient masters, you know, in India and Tibet and you know, the ones who really gotten it and understood it, that they have known for eons. So I think that we're going to see a lot more, you know, whether it's Kirlian photography taken to the next level. Can you imagine if we had in our legal system, you know, auric reading machines that you could see instantly whether somebody was telling the truth and what their vibration was and what it would do to transform?
Oh, yes.
I mean, I think a lot of these things can happen, and we just have to be open to them, and then people do their research, and it needs to be scientific because science does prove spirituality. We can't have religion and science be just...
Right. David, can I just stop you a second? I think we may have a caller on the line.
Wonderful.
So can I check here? Is there someone there waiting to speak to David? Evidently not. I thought I heard a little pip on the line indicating we had a caller. Okay, sorry to interrupt you. I thought there may be someone there waiting to have a word. Can you pick up where you left off?
Yeah, well, your question was very good for healing and sending it out to others.
Yes.
Violet light is a key for healing. And when you know, Jesus said, thy sins be forgiven. Well, what was that? That was the transmutation of karma. So the violet light helps to do that. And when he turned the water into wine, well, the wine is like a violet. I mean, he used alchemy to do that. He understood the laws of transformation and alchemy, and he was able to transform or transmute one type of matter into another. So he understood the violet light, even though it wasn't specifically stated in the Bible, because a lot was removed anyway. But yes, the violet energy helps to transmute the cause and core of pain, disease, stress, disease, which really is ignorance and impure thought, or the things that have allowed us to become unconscious or diseased. So when you remove the core rather than only treating the symptoms, then you're going to get to the cause and core of the problem, and it's going to be healed permanently. And, you know, people in New Age thought and those who are into health, you know, the new wave of health and wholeness and integrative practices know that, you know, it's better to deal not just with the symptoms or the outer effects of disease, but really deal with it at the core level. And when you do that, you do transmute the past, and I think that we can actually go back in time, in a sense, and undo the past. And you do that with a violet light. And it's kind of, it may seem like science fiction to some, but I've experienced it where I knew and saw past records of past civilizations, my own incarnations within them. And so I would, in meditation and with a certain spiritual practices, go back and see the record, have it put the violet light into it, transform any erroneous things that I've done, and forgive others as well as ask to be forgiven, and then undo that situation so that the core, the nadir of that experience is undone, forgiven, and transmuted, and then I can move on because consciously I've made this application. And
yes.
And some mystics who understand this science are assisting people in a great way in using this science. And it's one that you know, if it were used in the penal system and in psychology, it would transform the world, and that's what we're moving towards. So
yes,
the healing is at many levels, and of course, we always visualize it going forth and helping society. But most important is the internal change within us, because have you heard of Ho'oponopono?
Yes, I have, yes.
And you know, if you understand that science, you really work on yourself, and by working on yourself, you do transform everyone else. And it's not like you have to change another. You can really only work on yourself and change yourself, and by doing so, through the synchronicity of the fact that we are all one at a certain level of awareness, you know, in the inner core of our being, by transforming ourselves, we can change society. And we use this Ho'oponopono, some of the prayers that have been given, and we visualize and we see that, and the transformation has been awesome.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is, although as individuals we may not feel that we have much to contribute, in actual fact, we can alter the mass consciousness.
Absolutely. And if we feel that we're not worthy or that we're not capable, that's part of the problem. We need to feel one with all life and that we are connected. And by this connection, when we work right within our own life, right within our own meditation, it is transforming the earth. And so we have to first feel worthy of it. We have to love ourselves enough to say, yes, I can do this. And it's not us, the ego, that's doing it. It's not the human lower nature. It's the divine within us that does it.
Yeah. Now, you've actually said that there is one thing that people should never do, else they become vulnerable to the worst. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, we can't denigrate ourselves by condemning ourselves to because then we enter into a sense of hopelessness and depression. And, you know, in the Bible it talks about the sin against the Holy Spirit. Well, what is that? You know, some people think it's just blaspheming the name of God or something, or the Holy Spirit. Well, we can't deny life within the very essence of any individual or ourselves to the point where we snuff out the light within our own heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to always have respect for life, and we, you know, I love, Dr. Albert Schweitzer's term, reverence for life. I think it's such a key term for us to understand.
Yes.
When we have that reverence for life, then all of our decision-making is governed by this principle of respect and reverence. And then everything we do comes from a point of reality and of an interconnectedness through our heart to our source and then flowing out. So if we deny that we have the light and we continually look upon ourselves as sinners or lesser than God, then, you know, how can we rise into that Christic and prismatic energy that God has always held in his eye for us? And I say his, but God is, you know, male and female.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can't deny that we are God. And even Jesus said, ye are gods. And, you know, he wasn't saying humanly we are. But for people in a certain mode to continually deny or say that there is only one Son of God, and he's the only one that's perfect, and I can never get there. You know, that is really the ultimate blasphemy, because we're all sons and daughters of God. We all have God within our hearts, and it's not that we're doing it humanly, but we have to accept our divinity. And once we fully embrace that in a humble way, then we can do those greater works. Then we can rise into that level of awareness that every master wants us to be. Jesus' greatest fear was that he would be worshipped. And
yeah.
That's what's happened in Christianity today. He didn't want to be, you know, it's like you have a college professor. He teaches you everything about the course. And if he's a good professor, he wants you to transcend him, right? He doesn't want you to worship him. He doesn't want you to bow down before him and say he's the only professor. He wants you to hopefully take what he's taught and move into something new and exciting where you can take it to the next level. Well, that's what Jesus wanted. But people get hung up on the man rather than the teaching and the essence of who he was. And we need to transform Christianity into this. And there's some really good teachers and pastors out there who understand this dynamic, who are bringing it to people. But as a whole, a lot of the religions today have devolved into orthodoxy and away from the original message of the teacher, the prophet, the avatar who came to transform society and that culture. And if we can embrace the essence of what all of them taught and spoke and accept that and then apply it, then we'll have a new world. But if we continually are barraging each other and saying, I have the only way, or, you know, there's only one way, that's a detriment to an understanding that will bring about the golden age.
Yes. So we can say quite safely that your various heart centers are in no way to be considered as religious sects or things of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, look at how much violence has been done in the name of religion. It's really tragic. And, you know, if we can get out of this dualistic thinking or all the isms and the schisms, then we can move to this new energy. And a lot of people are getting it, but it needs to be really embraced at a more global way.
Yeah. Now, something I'd like to go back to. You lived apparently for 22 years, lived and worked, in fact, in what you called an intentional spiritual community. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, it was with a group called the Summit Lighthouse, and I founded in 1974, and I embraced that teaching, and it really worked for me. And I learned a lot, and we were building a self-sufficient community with, you know, organic farms and gardens and growing our own food. And some things happened that I didn't totally agree with, and so at a certain point, I had to move on. It wasn't that I didn't embrace the teaching. It's just that some of the current, I think that elements of what is happening at some levels were a little bit stifling to creativity and to moving into this new energy. So I didn't know what was going to happen to me would happen, but that kind of moved me beyond that. And I think we always have to be ready for what God is speaking to us today. And we can't rest on our laurels. We can't say, well, so-and-so was the last true messenger that will exist on the planet. Because, I mean, this is what the Muslims believe. You know, Muhammad and others, you know, there aren't going to be any more. And I think that limits God. I think God is always revealing new truth, new revelation through those who can attune to God's heart. And so when this teaching came through me, I was quite awestruck. But now there are many true messengers around the earth. I mean, Daniel Brinkley is an amazing man, and what he's bringing forth. And there's many beautiful people who are saying the same thing I'm saying. And when we have this, when many voices are truly saying the same, then you know that it's true if it resonates in your heart. It doesn't mean just because many people are saying it's true, but there is this common upsurge of a new wave and a new energy thought that is permeating everything, and it is transforming everything. And so when, you know, I was following the teachings of Mark and Elizabeth Clare Prophet, and I got a lot from them, but, you know, Mark passed on, and Elizabeth is retired and has Alzheimer's and is deteriorating physically very fast. She's very active spiritually, I think, on the inner planes, but I had to embrace the teaching and move into a new awareness and not just say that, okay, what came through them up until this date or this year is the whole truth, you know.
Yeah.
So I have to be open, and I found many wonderful teachings. We were in India, and I was able to deliver a beautiful discourse from a master who's a Buddha named Lord Maitreya at the stupa where Gautama gave his first public sermon in Sarnath, and there's this giant stupa there. Well, the very day there was all these other Buddhist groups chanting and sitting on the lawn, beautiful deer park. And, well, lo and behold, one of them was Thich Nhat Hanh, and he was there with, you know, probably over 100 people. I didn't even know he was going to be there that day. But there we both were the same day. It was very synchronistic.
Yeah.
And I consider him a true teacher, and he's probably the second most known Buddhist teacher on the earth besides the Dalai Lama. Well, I embrace all the teaching that they're both getting because I resonate with that, with their teaching. And,
yes,
and a lot of what we embrace in the Heart Center, and by the way, our website is www.heartscenter.org if people want to check it out more. But anyway,
yeah.
Thich Nhat Hanh is beautiful, and he's 82 years old, and my wife, on the way over, had bought a couple books by him and was reading them on the plane. I thought it was very interesting. So,
yes,
we can do so much more when we work together and when we embrace the divinity within each other and we honor that and we don't try to play games and we don't try to denigrate other religions. And even though I've made some statements about Orthodox Christianity, I still honor everyone's path, because at the level of understanding where they are, that's where they are, and you love them and embrace them. But I just don't think that certain teachings are moving us into this new Aquarian light, and that's a lot of the old will just fall away because people will be transformed from within.
Yeah, no, I agree with you entirely. Now, David, I've got about 4 to 5 minutes left. I think we should continue talking about your website and what people can gain from it, because I understand that these inspired discourses that you get from the Ascended Masters is available in audio, print, and video format. Now, are all the details of that available from your website?
Yeah, it's either theheartcenter.org or just heartcenter.org. There's no apostrophe, and they can type it in. There's a thing called Library, and when you click on Library, you can click on something called Heart Streams. And this is a new term we received. It's a beautiful concept, Heart Streams, and also Heart Streaming. And it's like better than brainstorming, you know? But these Heart Streams are these messages from the Masters, and I usually receive one virtually every day, and they're delivered live over our broadcast in the morning, and then they're up, and then we put them up for people to listen to again, and then when we can get to it, we transcribe them and make them available in print form, but we're kind of behind on that right now.
Yes.
It takes, you know, personnel to do it, and we don't have a huge staff. But there's that. There's also under Sanctuary, they can replay various audio broadcasts, and then under Sanctuary, there's broadcasts where you can listen live, and you can just click on in the morning, and also in the evenings we have services, and we're trying to do a lot more in terms of more teaching. That we have what we call Meru University, which is an online kind of a teleconference classes that go on for 6 weeks. Our next one is all about community building or actually we're engaging it right now, community building. And we have a conference coming up in Dallas, December 30th through January 3rd at the Wyndham, the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport North. And that's the whole class is called Looking Forward to a New Earth, Preparing for Planetary Change Now. And we have various events. We always go on a pilgrimage each year. We went to India this year. We're going to go to South Africa next year and hopefully Europe. And we had 99 people go to the to Egypt, and we went inside the Great Pyramid, and that was wonderful. We've been to South America, Tibet, Taiwan, Japan, and Greece and Rome last year. And so we do these sacred journeys where we do anchor spiritual light across the earth, and that's very important to us. But the
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
You've mentioned that you've been on a pilgrimage already this year. When you come back from them, do you sort of write a story which you leave on the web about your experiences? Because no doubt that you have some very interesting ones.
Well, this Sunday from 9 to 11 Mountain Time in the morning on our website through our broadcast, we'll be sharing what happened over a two-week period.
All right.
And it's pretty cool. With pictures, and then I'll do a summary of all the major messages that the Ascended Masters presented to us, and others will tell anecdotal stories of what they experienced and some of the sights and sounds and kind of the history of the sites that we visited, the holy places, including the Taj Mahal, but a lot of these incredible temples of different, you know, religious persuasions. So it was a wonderful trip. We did a lot of spiritual work, and we were all transformed by the people there because of how beautiful they were, but also seeing the poverty and really having a new imprint on awareness of what we can do to help India.
That's wonderful, yeah. Well, I regret to say, David, that I've actually come to the end of the program. I can't believe where the time's gone, and you're an excellent speaker. And it's been terrifically interesting. So it only remains for me to thank you very much for coming onto the program. And I will tell our listeners that next Friday I have a metaphysical teacher and author, Jacqueline Lloyd. So when I send out the details to the people on my subscribers list, I'll give you a little bit more information on top of that one. So thank you again, David. It's been very nice to speak with you.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate it. God bless you, and thank you so much.
God bless you, too. Well, thank you, everyone. That's the end of the program. Thank you for being with me, and I do hope you can manage to be with me next week. God bless you all.